Hello, everyone. Welcome to our The Week That Was in Europe podcast. My name is Dirk Schumacher. I'm the head of European macro research at Natixis. And with me, as usual, is Klaus Adam, professor of economics at the University of Mannheim.
Hello, also from my side, and welcome to the podcast. So today we would like to take a look at the ongoing reform discussion regarding fiscal rules in Europe. The European Commission has issued in November a few key points on how fiscal rules could be reformed in Europe. And the discussion is now heating up as the fiscal budget for the year 2024 will soon need to be drafted. And for this, governments need to know what the set of rules is they need to sort of follow. We'll have a look at the Commission proposal, we'll evaluate its merits, and also provide an update on where governments currently stand in terms of their fiscal positions. But before jumping into our main topic, let's have a look at the latest European economic data. There was quite interesting data coming out on the inflation front, Dirk.
Indeed, and the data moved markets quite a bit. So headline inflation in the euro area went down to 8.5 after 8.6. However, market expectations were for a more significant decline, and moreover, core inflation, that means excluding energy and food, went up to 5.6 after 5.3, the highest reading ever. And within core, it was mostly service inflation that pushed core inflation higher. So overall, kind of unpleasant reading here. And several ECB governing council members came out and sounded rather hawkish. That said, so far, the development of inflation during the first quarter is in line with the December ECB staff projections. And by itself, not a surprise, but the increase in core clearly is the wrinkle here. I would also mention, though, that there's a big base effect coming in March, so inflation should decline and a lot of things can happen. But clearly, these numbers put the ECB on its back foot, and we'll see how they respond then in 2 weeks' time at the March meeting. But let's move to fiscal rules, Klaus.
Right. So let's start with the fiscal situation first and then discuss the Commission proposal in the second step. So some big picture issues. So debt to GDP ratio in the euro area has been going up big time over the past years. There was a first big push in response to the global financial crisis in 2007-08. And then again, in response to the COVID recession in 2020 and thereafter. And but, you know, now that growth has rebounded in 2022 and the opening of their economies has been going on, debt to GDP ratio started to come down a little bit. So to provide some numbers, the debt to GDP ratio in Germany, for instance, went up from close to 60% in 2000 to slightly above 80% in 2010 following the financial crisis. It went back to below 60%. In 2019, but then following the COVID pandemic, again rose to somewhat close to 70%. So a zigzag pattern.
And the French ratio stood at 58.9 in 2000, so below 60% as well. Similar to the German level, it then went up to 85.3 in 2010, following the financial crisis, same as in Germany. But then it failed to come down. Instead, it increased further to 97.4 in 2019, just prior to the COVID pandemic. And it now stands at 111.7 in 2022. It's a first estimate, so there can still be changes, but roughly that magnitude is what we should expect, which is more than a 40 percentage points increase, or rather higher than Germany. In other words, the debt level in France kept more or less steadily increasing. And the debt trajectory in Italy was also steadily rising, 109% in 2000, 119% in 2010, 134% in 2019, and 144.6% in 2022, according to the first estimate.
Okay, so more or less, you know, zigzag stable pattern in Germany, upward dynamics in France and Italy. And then there's one other country we should perhaps mention in this context, and that's Belgium. What's interesting about Belgium is that the debt dynamic is that it is the only country where the debt has been actually falling. and where debt in 2022 is lower than in 2000. So debt in 2022 stands at 106% of GDP, while in the year 2000, it was at 100, close to 110. So we'll not list the debt figures for all the remaining countries, obviously, but we can summarize overall picture for debt by saying that debt has increased in almost all countries over the last 20 years in the euro area. All countries have seen a big jump in debt after the financial crisis and the pandemic. And also the euro area crisis in 2010-12 led to a further increase in debt in many countries. And now there's a bigger dispersion of debt levels between euro area countries than there was back in the year 2000.
And rising debt levels did actually not matter that much in the past, simply because interest rates were falling like a rock. And as a result, government's net interest expenses as a share of GDP were falling despite higher debt to GDP ratios. To give some numbers, the combined interest payments of euro-era countries stood at 5.4% of GDP in 1995, 3.8% in 2000, 2.8% in 2010, and 1.5% in 2021. So despite an increase in debt, the interest payments went down quite substantially.
Yeah, but the situation now has profoundly changed. Since June of 2022, the ECB has raised interest rates by over 3 percentage points, and the market expects this year another percent until the end of the summer of 2024. So the increase in the short rates have also led to an increase in the long-term rates, and a GDP-weighted 10-year average interest rate for the euro area. That means taking the 10-year rate of each country and weighing it by its relative GDP in the euro area. So that 10-year rate on average stood at 0.2% in 2021, but rose to 2%, so almost a 2 percentage point increase in 2022.
And as a result, the refinancing conditions of government have profoundly changed. If higher interest rates will persist for a longer period, then they will gradually have an effect on government interest expenses, even without new debt being issued in net terms, simply because existing debt that's rolled over will have to be refinanced at significantly higher rates. And this will mainly have effects on governments with high debt to GDP ratios and governments with a lot of debt that is maturing near term. These governments can brace themselves for higher interest rate expenditures in budgets.
Yeah, one may think actually that the high inflation rates that are currently prevailing may help governments in bringing down their debt to GDP ratios, simply because the debt to GDP ratio is a ratio where in the denominator there is GDP, nominal GDP. And if nominal GDP increases, this brings down this ratio. Okay. The issue is that this line of thinking is not entirely correct, because one needs to look at the correct inflation rate. If inflation is high simply because imported goods become more expensive, say oil or natural gas, then this in itself will not lead to inflation in terms of GDP, that is, in terms of domestic value added.
In fact, we can see that headline CPI inflation can diverge strongly from GDP inflation, or the so-called deflator. So in France, the annual rate of the GDP deflator stood at the final quarter of 2022 at 4.6% year over year, and compared with a consumer price inflation rate of 7%. So inflation, headline inflation, running quite a bit higher than the domestic value added inflation. For Germany, the deflator was 6% and the inflation rate 8.6%. And finally, in Italy, 1.7 in Q3, that's the latest data we have for the deflator, while inflation was a whopping 9%.
Yeah, so particularly Italy, there is this large gap between headline inflation and GDP inflation. Of course, the low GDP inflation also means Italy is gaining in terms of cost competitiveness. Now, another risk factor is that high inflation rates may push up longer-term nominal rates in a disproportionate way, simply because investors demand a bigger inflation risk premium. This partly reflects the fact that higher levels of inflation are also associated with more variable inflation, and the risk premium compensates investors for holding this risk. Up until the pandemic, that inflation risk premium was very low, as inflation was considered to be a non-issue. As inflation shot up and remains high prospectively, at least for some time, this inflation risk premium may increase, putting an additional burden on the government's fiscal position, especially for countries with a high debt-to-GDP ratio.
Just to illustrate what dramatic changes are going on in the interest rate environment, we can look at real interest rates. Over the past 15 years, real interest rates in Europe were consistently below the real growth rate of the economy. And as a result, debt dynamics were stable, even in situations where governments were running permanent primary deficits. That is, even in a situation where government expenses, net of interest payments, exceeded government revenues. There are some countries, like Italy, that actually run a primary surplus, but many countries run a primary deficit, and nevertheless, that was not really an issue.
Yes, with interest rates now rising and at least prospectively becoming positive again, it becomes imperative to have a sufficiently positive real growth rate of the economy. Governments that fail to achieve this need to run primary surpluses suddenly instead of deficits in order to ensure that debt dynamics remain on a sustainable path. That is, they need to have expenses before interest rate expenses that fall short of tax revenue. It is against this backdrop that we should evaluate the ongoing discussion about the reform of fiscal rules in Europe.
So let's briefly discuss why fiscal rules are needed at all in Europe. Wouldn't it be up to voters in each country to put pressure, or maybe not, on their domestic governments to ensure debt sustainability? Well, the answer is that this is too simplistic a view. Since we are in a monetary union, the fiscal position of one country can also affect other countries in a more direct way, as there's no exchange rate that would allow to offset different fiscal paths.
Yes, and perhaps more importantly, it's simply politically and economically very difficult to let any country in the euro area default. The knock-on effects this would have could easily be devastating. We have seen what happened around the Greek sovereign debt crisis in the euro area, and we certainly want to avoid a repeat of this, especially a repeat in which perhaps a large country would be the source of the problem. Given this, it is of the utmost importance to prevent a situation where debt sustainability is generally questioned by investors, and where the political economic options that are left have significant side effects. And so we have fiscal rules that are meant to ensure that the euro area does not find itself in such a position.
So the European Commission has now put forward in November last year a proposal suggesting two quite drastic changes to the existing fiscal framework in Europe. First, the Commission proposes to move away from a set of common reference values for the fiscal adjustment. In particular, it proposes it can prescribe to individual countries a reference adjustment path that is based on the Commission's debt sustainability analysis. This path should ensure that medium-term debt dynamics are on a what they call plausible downward path, and that the 3% reference value for the deficit to GDP ratio, which is mentioned in the European Treaty, is satisfied. So whenever a country has a fiscal situation that is deemed not sustainable, then the Commission would say, put forward a path what the deficit should look like in order to get back to the situation of sustainable debt dynamics. In the response to the Commission's proposal, the country can then submit its individual adjustment plan with the option to propose a longer adjustment period by up to 3 years when the slower adjustment is underpinned by a set of reforms or investment commitments. The commitments need to contribute to the debt sustainability or to be in line with common EU priorities to target. So the idea is here, if you increase your growth path because you do structural reforms. That means the debt to GDP ratio will improve simply because GDP will grow stronger on the back of these reforms.
So that was the first part of the proposal. And then there was a second big proposed change. The Commission proposes to move away from the deficit indicator as the primary indicator to something that they call net primary expenditure. And that is government expenditure, as far as one can understand it, net of interest payment, fine, and net of unemployment insurance costs. So the Commission feels that this measure is one that is under better discretionary control of the government than the deficit itself, which depends a lot on the business cycle and also on tax income. And of course, unemployment expenditures fluctuate strongly over the cycle. So in return for this relaxation of the rules, then the Commission proposes some more stringent enforcement mechanisms. In particular, the financial penalties imposed by the Commission in case of a deviation from the expenditure plan should be lowered, according to the Commission's proposal. Why is this a stricter way of enforcing the proposal? Well, the intention here is that one makes it more likely that these penalties are ever called. And we'll see whether that will work.
And the fact that the Commission proposed to replace the common adjustment path criteria by a bilateral bargaining process between the country and the Commission represents a significant departure from the current rules. While the current rules impose an admittedly illusionary adjustment path in terms of the debt trajectory, especially for countries with high debt levels, replacing the common framework by an individually bargained adjustment is unlikely to lead to better outcomes in terms of the debt trajectory.
Yeah, what this amounts to is an effective relaxation of the rules, precisely at a time where some countries would soon need to run substantial primary surpluses in order to stabilize the debt dynamics, in particular countries with weak growth dynamics. Put differently, one would need to believe that the European Commission will be a stricter enforcer of fiscal discipline than the European Council, that is, the Council of all finance ministers. While this is possible, past behavior of the Commission does not necessarily instill a lot of confidence in this view actually being true. Bilateral negotiations also imply a significant increase in the political power of the European Commission. And this seems quite problematic given the lack of electoral legitimacy of the Commission.
Yeah, one really wonders whether the Commission knows exactly what kind of position it could get itself into if it's then seen as the bad cop. The political ramification of that indeed could be quite significant. But the focus on the net primary expenditure path is perhaps well intended. But it also opens up the possibility of fiscal recklessness. So a government, for instance, could produce a sugar rush for the economy by significantly cutting taxes. As this boosts economic activity, it will most likely reduce net primary expenditures, even though in terms of the deficit, things would move exactly in the opposite way. This assumes, of course, that the myth of a self-refinancing tax cut is in fact a myth. So cutting taxes does not improve your fiscal situation in the medium or long run. And what's important for the debt dynamics and their stability over time is the debt deficit to GDP ratio and not the net primary expenditure ratio, because obviously the revenues matter here too. It is thus hard to see how the Commission can come up with a proposal for a country's net expenditure path that ensures that the debt to GDP ratio is on a downward path. Certainly, you can come up with scenarios where that is not the case.
Yeah, so overall, the question lingering here in the background of all this is how can these more relaxed rules possibly be enforced? This is particularly relevant in light of the fact that the current stricter framework, that is the one applying prior to the COVID exceptions, was not properly enforced either. I think the risk of a too lax fiscal framework and of lax enforcement of that framework should not be underestimated. A debt crisis by a large country could trigger shockwaves that have the potential to blow up the euro area and the European Union. So my preference would be rather to err on the side of a too conservative fiscal rule set, and just to make sure that we do not get ourselves again in any such kind of trouble as we have seen during the debt crisis that Greece has experienced.
And the German finance minister has signaled that he's not particularly happy with the reform proposal of the European Commission. It may thus be that we'll find ourselves back in the old fiscal framework, starting with fiscal year 2024, when the rules should be reinstated, unless there's a change. And that would certainly lead to some large fiscal adjustment down the road, though the past has shown that the old framework has also a lot of room for interpretation. So it's not the case necessarily that the old framework has led to dramatic adjustments if needed. So this remains interesting in any case going forward, and we'll see what the outcome of this reform debate is in the end. What we can be quite sure, it does matter a lot. And given the fiscal situation, how it has developed, I'm sure we'll come back to that. Thanks for your time, Klaus, and speak to you next week.